Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So continuing the chapter, the system of universal management, and that's Canto 8, Chapter 14, and today we'll be covering Text 6 and Text 7, and Text 6 has a purport, so we'll be chanting Text 6 responsively. Palayanti Praja Pala Yavat otum vipagas shaha Yaya yagna baga bujo deva Ye cha tatran vitas cha tai Palayanti praja pala Yavat antam vipagashaha Yagna baga bujo deva Ye cha tatran vitas cha tai Palayashanti praja pala Yavat antam vipagashaha Yagna baga bujo deva Ye cha tatran vitas cha tai Please chant Palayanti prajapala Yavadantam vipagashaha Yagabhaja bhuto deva Yecha tantra tritas chatai Palayanti prajapala Yavadantam vipagashaha Yagya Bhaja Bhujo Deva Yecha Tatran Vitas Chatai Palayanti Praja Pala Yavad Antam Vipagashaha Yagya Bhaja Bhujo Deva Ye cha tatran vitas chattai Palayanti praja pala Yavad antam vipagashaha Yagna bhaga bujo deva Ye cha tatran vitas chattai Palayanti prajapala Yavadantam vipagashaha Yavaja bujo deva Ye cha tantan vitas chatai Palayanti prajapala Yavadantam vipagashaha Yagna bhaga bujo deva Ye cha tatran vitas chatai So the word for word for text 6, palayanti, execute the order. Praja pala, the rulers of the world, namely the sons and grandsons of Manu. Yavat antam, unto the end of Manu's reign. Vibhagashaha, in divisions. Yagna bhaga buja, the enjoyers of the result of yagyas. Devaha, the demigods. Ye, others. Cha, also. Tatra anvitaha, engaged in that business. Cha, also. Tai, by them. So the translation, to enjoy the results of sacrifices, yagyas, the rulers of the world, namely the sons and grandsons of Manu, discharge the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until the end of Manu's reign. The demigods also share the results of these sacrifices. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.2, evam parampara praptam imam rajasayo vidhu. The supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. This parampara system extends from Manu to Ikshvaku and from Ikshvaku to his sons and grandsons. The rulers of the world in the line of hierarchy execute the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the parampara system. Anyone interested in peaceful life must participate in this parampara system and perform yagyas. As Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the parampara system of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we must perform Sankirtan Yagya all over the world. Yagnai Sankirtan Prajai Yayanti Hi Sumedhasaha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this age of Kali, and he will be easily satisfied if the Sankirtan movement is spread vigorously all over the world. This will also make people happy without a doubt. And text 7. Indro Bhagavata Datam Chailokya Sriyam Ujitam Punjanaha Puti Lokam Strin Kamain Loke Pravas Shati. The translation. Indra, King of Heaven, receiving benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus enjoying highly developed opulences, maintains the living entities all over the three worlds by pouring sufficient rain on all the planets. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpa Taribhyas Cha Kripa Sandubhya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. there's a particular generalization that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport of text 6, which we chanted together. And he says As Gaudiya Vaishnavas in the Parampara system of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we must perform Sankirtan Yajna all over the world. And this is actually a comment of Srila Prabhupada on the response that's being given by Sukadev Goswami to a question that Maharaj Parikshit asked of him. So Srila Sukadev Goswami, he gave a response to Maharaj Parikshit to the initial question that was asked of him. So this was the question that Maharaj Parikshit had asked. He asked, please explain to me how Manu and the others in each Manvantar are engaged in their respective duties and by whose order they are engaged. So this was his question. And the response that Srila Sukadev Goswami gave to Maharaj Parikshit was that the rulers of the world, namely the sons and the grandsons of Manu, they discharge their duties under the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until the end of Manu's reign. So a very simple question, simple answer. And he gives a reason for why they're busy doing this. And he says that they're enjoying the results of sacrifices. And he's adding that the demigods also share the results of these sacrifices. Now, the how part of the question by Maharaj Parikshit of how Manu and the other Manvatars are engaged in their respective duties, this could be examined in the light of Srila Sukadev Goswami's response to him. So the current rulers of the world, and this is interesting, we're living in a world where we're not even aware fully of who are the rulers of the entire system. So right now, the ruler of the world in the present reign is Vaivashvata Manu, and he's the seventh Manu, and it's the 28th Yuga cycle in the allotted 71 Yuga cycles that he has for his reign. And it's within this context that he's actually executing the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this ruler of the world in this title or this post of Manu, he has the name Shraddhadeva. And he's got seven sons, so that we're all oblivious to this, but these are the rulers at the very time that we're living in. So Shraddhadeva has got seven sons, and the name of the sons are Ikshvaku, Nabaga, Drishta, Saryati, Narsyanta, Nabaga, Dishta, Tarusha, Prishadra, and Vasuman. Now, to get a little grasp of how it is that these rulers are the enjoyers of sacrifice or the beneficiaries of sacrifice, we can turn to, because they're acting under the orders of Lord Krishna, we can turn to some indication that Lord Krishna is giving of them being the beneficiaries of sacrifice. And in Bhagavad Gita 3:14, Krishna describes the logical sequence that leads to sacrifice. So he explains, all living entities subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. So there's a sequence. So although they're the beneficiaries of sacrifice, it's actually directed, meaning the rulers of the world, Shraddhadeva and the seven sons, It's actually prescribed in the Vedas that, or directed by the Vedas to satisfy the Yajna Purusha, meaning the true enjoyer of sacrifices, who's the personal beneficiary of the sacrifices, and that's the master of the demigods. So under the rulers are the demigods. So the master of the demigods, the personal beneficiary of all sacrifices, is Lord Krishna. And those, just again to highlight who are the particular entities that are ruling at this time that we're living in. In this seventh Manu Shraddhava's reign, the demigods are the Adityas, the Vasus, Rudras, Vishvadevas, and the Maruts. There's also the Ashvini Kumaras, the Ribhus, and King Indra has a particular name, so that post of King Indra is occupied by Purandara. So the connection between the Yajna Purusha, the true enjoyer of sacrifice, and the sacrifice that's coming from prescribed duties according to Lord Krishna's instruction, because that's the connection that's been made, that the sacrifice is coming from prescribed duties. So to highlight this connection, there's a particular declaration that's made by right in the beginning of Bhagavatam by Srila Suta Goswami, who declares to the sages of Namisharanya, this is his statement. I'll read the Sanskrit and then give the translation. Ata pumbir dvija shrestha vanashram vibhagasaha sanushtistaya dharmasya samsidir hari toshanam. And the translation, it's Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.19. O best among the twice born, it is concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to caste division and order of life, is to please Lord Hari. So it's quite clear, this whole connection. Krishna's statement in the Bhagavad Gita, the connection between the performance of prescribed duties leading to sacrifice, and then what is the result of that sacrifice. And so Srila Suta Goswami particularly highlights that this discharge of prescribed duties is according to caste division and the particular order of life that one is in. And the goal of it is to please the Yajna Purusha, the true beneficiary of sacrifice, Lord Hari. And now, the other component of performing sacrifice, or the result of sacrifice, and the immediately visible result of performing sacrifice to please Lord Krishna or Lord Hari, is that Purandara, who's in that post of Lord Indra, and who's been appointed as the officer to manage material affairs, he supplies rain. So that's the visible result of any yajna that's performed to Lord Hari, Lord Krishna. And this supply of rain is dependent upon the yajna of everybody acting according to the particular classification that each entity has, which means that one has to act, if one's a brahmana, a brahmachari, as a brahmachari, if one's in the category of grahasta, as a grahasta, if one's in the category of a vanaprastha, as a vanaprastha, if one's in the category of a sannyasi, as a sannyasi. So it means acting according to that main Vedic principle that's been put out by Srila Suta Goswami, to please Lord Krishna, the beneficiary of sacrifice. So, for example, for the brahmachari, this is to, and this is quoting from Krishna saying what is the action that's to be performed by that particular category to please him. Sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. And others, the householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So what does this mean? So the yagya, or the sacrifice for the brahmachari, or brahmacharini in that case, is to control the mind by abstaining from sense gratification. So that's the yagya that's pleasing to Lord Hari, that would be visible if one's performing it correctly by rain coming down from Purandara in the post of Lord Indra. So, and I might add that rain should be at night time, because that's the auspicious time for rain to fall. It shouldn't be like in the middle of the day, you know, when one's trying to perhaps perform Sankirtan outside. So, so this is also an indication of the yagya being performed in a way that's been pleasing. So, and the means for the brahmachari or the brahmacharini to control the mind is to hear only words concerning Krishna consciousness. So Hare Nam Sankirtan chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. So this is the particular yagya that persons in that category, if they're acting in that particular way, then their sacrifice is pleasing to Lord Krishna, who's the Yagya Purusha. So and of course hearing the transcendental sound vibration of the Maha Mantra. Now for the householder, the Grahasta, for example, the yagya that's performed is according to the principle of marriage, which means that sex life is restricted. So that's a particular yagya. And also, they're not indulging deliberately in sense gratification. So by not doing so, the yagya is one of cultivating not being attached. So this is the particular sacrifice performed by the householder. And this leads to that samsidhir hari toshanam, that it's according to one's division in life, that one's acting to please Lord Hari. and this allows for forward movement in one's spiritual life, moving towards perfection. so this progress, or this movement towards perfection, is participating in the parampara system, which means that one's actually following these particular orders laid out in the Vedas. And there's a particular effect that results from the performance of these yagyas. And that effect is that there's a peaceful life. And this is something Srila Prabhupada highlights in this particular purport to this verse. And it's interesting because in one sense he's echoing the words of Lord Chaitanya, because these were the words of Lord Chaitanya. Distribute this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Let people eat these fruits and ultimately become free from old age and death. So the peaceful life that's a result of performing yagyas according to one's division in society is that the greatest disturbances, those that cause the most upheaval, are being brought to an end, and that's taking birth. It's a major upheaval, or going through death. It's the most extreme upheaval of life. Or even having to experience the horror of old age or becoming diseased. So those are the particular upheavals, the greatest disturbances in living that get brought to an end by performing these yagyas to please Lord Krishna. and this is all done through the chanting of the Maha Mantra. And the reason these miseries come to an end, these huge disturbances, these huge upheavals, is because through chanting the Maha Mantra, one's entering into eternality. So no longer is one subject to time and the corporeal way of living. There's another reason that life becomes peaceful through the performance of these yagyas, and that is that many of the dangers and the difficulties just in daily living are put to an end. And because one's pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so therefore one's no longer experiencing disturbances. I came across a very graphic description in the early days of Krishna consciousness of something of the social environment in which Srila Prabhupada entered. And this was in San Francisco in the Haight-Ashbury district, which I guess was the nucleus of the hippie movement. So this graphic description describes or gives some picture of how difficulties and disturbances are brought to an end just by taking up the Maha Mantras. So I'm going to read the description because it gives you a picture of the huge social upheaval and the effect of the Maha Mantra. So this is a devotee, Haridas, recounting this, and it's in Satsvarupa Maharaja's Lilamrita. The Radha Krishna temple was a kind of spiritual haven. Kids sensed it. They were running, living in the streets, no place where they could go, where they could rest, where people weren't going to hurt them. A lot of kids would literally fall into the temple. I think it saved a lot of lives. There might have been a lot more casualties if it had not been for Hare Krishna. It was like opening a temple in a battlefield. Although the Swami had no precedence for dealing with any of this, he applied the chanting with miraculous results. The chanting was wonderful. It worked. So it's like literally persons would have been casualties or at least really gone down a very degraded path. And certainly many of the addictions that were prevalent at that time did shorten life dramatically. So this is a graphic description of the application of a yagya, a sacrifice that's pleasing Lord Hari, and actually curtailing all those addictive behaviors or taking to addictive substances that was bringing about so much upheaval in their lives. The upheaval came to an end. So I thought that description was kind of interesting. Now, there's another aspect that one can look at, and the demigods raise a particular question. And the demigods ask Lord Vishnu on this topic of being delivered from the material world. And this is how what they want to know. And this was earlier on when we were prior to the churning of the milk ocean, and the demigods were in a state of distress. They'd lost their entire kingdom. The demons were occupying the post they'd been occupied. All the duties that they were performing were now being curtailed because they weren't in their proper position because the demigods had usurped their positions. So they posed this question. They ask, and it's particularly Lord Brahma, I think, who's speaking here. He says, "I, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and all the demigods, accompanied by the Prajapatis like Daksha, are nothing but sparks illuminated by you, who are the original fire. Since we are particles of you, what can we understand about our welfare? O Supreme Lord, please give us the means of deliverance that is suitable for the Brahmanas and the demigods." So, the demigods being so highly intelligent, they don't ask for a general panacea. They're very specific. We want one that's suitable for us, the demigods, and or being delivered from material distress, and something that's suitable for the brahmanas. They're very specific. This is from the earlier on the in the eighth chapter, I mean the eighth canto, the sixth chapter. And it's interesting, this question, because only the brahmanas and the demigods can be delivered from material suffering or even material existence as a whole by the instructions of the Supreme Lord. So everything that Krishna utters, anything that one reads in the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, any of his words are considered to be a mantra, any words that he says. And the reason this is so is because it immediately stops any kind of mental, what would be the word, a kind of mental examination. Is it this or is it that? Does it mean this or does it mean that? Or if one were to do this, would this result? All of that is brought to an end simply by hearing Krishna's words. So any words he utters, any sentence is considered a mantra. But at the same time, it's understood that only the brahmanas and the demigods are actually able to benefit truly from those words or benefit in the sense of being able to be delivered from material existence, because they can hear correctly. So it means that you could say, according to the demigod's question, it would appear that it's impossible for anybody who's not falling into the category of a demigod or a brahmana to be delivered from material existence. I mean, that would be the implication of the demigod's questions. And these are the most intelligent entities in the material universe. So now, in the case of brahmanas and demigods, the particular mantra that they have access to is the Gayatri mantra. And in this yuga, it's the Gayatri mantra that actually is delivering one from the dangers of material existence. But not everybody is falling into these two categories of being a demigod and a brahmana. So it's actually becomes the Maha mantra, which is given by Krishna, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, in his incarnation of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya states it very, very explicitly. So separate from the demigod's very pointed interest, one actually gets the magnanimous, what should be the word, gift that Lord Chaitanya has brought, because this mantra can deliver anybody from suffering, even persons who can't hear the statements being made by Lord Krishna. And he puts it this way, very precisely, very explicitly. He says, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Nama Eva Kevalam, Yati Naste Eva Gatir Anyatam. So in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means for deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There's no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. So it's quite extraordinary that a magnanimity that extends way beyond the small, you couldn't say, well, I shouldn't say small, but specific category of demigods and brahmanas that could benefit from all the transcendental literatures. It's extended to everyone the means to actually have that peaceful life in a time that's completely disturbed. One has personal experience of this. Living as a grahasta for many years, I've understood that the statement that there's quarrel and hypocrisy in the world applies even in one's most personal situation. There's always the tendency to want to quarrel about something. So, one's very grateful that there's the Maha Mantra. So, yeah. Now, the demigods, with their super intelligence, they highlight why this is so, that one can come to this peaceful life, or that there's no other way for being delivered from material existence. And this is how they put it. There may be so many discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regulative principles. And moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, person, paraphernalia. But when your lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. So that's from the also the 8th canto, the 23rd chapter, so a little bit ahead, 17th verse. So this means that, like, we're practicing deity worship, and there may be some discrepancies in the worship. Like, one may overlook something, or like something in following the procedures of worship. One may forget some item. But everything gets compensated for by chanting the holy name. So generally when, you know, practically one does deity worship, does the offering of everything that's cooked to the deities, one does the artik, at the end of everything, it ends off that one is praying that the deities and the devotees kindly overlook any of the faults that were performed in following the procedures of worship and in actually executing the worship. And one ends it by saying that one remembers now Krishna and one chants the Maha Mantra. So the Maha Mantra closes off everything and puts in place any little fault that was there. So in conclusion, this performance of yagya, or by performing yagya, persons become Krishna conscious and they become godly in all respects. So in this terrible time of this hypocrisy, this quarreling, this extraordinary effect results, one becomes godly. And following the Vedic principles, you know, acting according to the particular, one's particular division in society or in the Vanashram system, one comes to understand one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. And that's Vedaischa Sarvai Aham Eva Vedya. So in the beginning of creation, and I'm going to state this particular verse, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifice for Lord Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by the yagya, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So the blessing is there if one is actually performing the prescribed sacrifice. It's already a given that one's life will be extremely peaceful and free of all the disturbances that come with this age and with the particular corporeal existence that one has to go through. So if anybody has some thought to expand this discussion, I'd be delighted.
Hare Krishna. Happy Thanksgiving, first of all. And thanks for giving excellent class. So you were mentioning that verse from 1-2-13. It's one of my favorite verses. I think it's Bhaktisiddhanta is one of his favorite verses too. That the purpose of dharma or yagya sacrifices samsidhir hadi toshana, it's meant for thanksgiving to the Lord and not meant for thanksgiving from the Lord. So when I looked at this verse, when you hear the about the sacrifice, chanting of the holy name, of course the first thing that comes to probably most of our minds is Haridasa Thakur, because Lord Chaitanya called them the Namacharya. And the reason I appreciate it, a lot of times when you look at that pastime, you may think, oh, Haridasa Thakur was pleasing to the Lord because he chanted 300,000 names of the Lord, naturally. That's our conclusion. But there's a really excellent purport of Prabhupada, and verification on this point, I'll mention it to you guys. It's a really nice purport you can look at. It's the same points I mention all the time, pretty much. I'm like a broken record. But basically, what pleased the Lord about Haridas Thakur wasn't his chanting necessarily, but his tendency to sacrifice his ego by forgiving a prostitute who worked as a co-conspirator to try to ruin his reputation. And naturally, if somebody tries to ruin our reputation, we can't chant we may chant the Maha Mantra, but all types of offenses are going through our minds, essentially. So in verification on this point, in Prabhupada's, in the sixth canto, chapter 4, verse 5, Prabhupada mentions these points that there are basically two types of austerities. Basically, popularity producing austerities and false ego reducing austerities. He mentions Hiranyakashipu, although Hiranyakashipu and Ravana performed so many austerities, including celibacy for Hiranyakashipu, he couldn't perform the austerity of giving up his false ego, so all his austerities were like useless. So my question is basically essentially the same as before. How do we keep in mind that, you know, that when we have festival, like Festival of the Holy Name, we may consider it difficult to chant like Haridas Thakur. But if we had an option of, would you rather chant 300,000 names in one day? Or would you rather forgive someone, apologize to someone, or admit some of your faults that you want to keep secret? Then it would be so much easier to chant the holy name. So that's essentially my question. How can we develop this taste of austerities where it reduces our false ego? Otherwise, that's that verse that says in ID 8:16, Bahu jama kadayadi shravanam kirtan tabutana paya krishna pade primadan. Even if you chant the holy name for many births, you won't get the result if you commit aparad. So the essence of any chanting is to reduce the false ego. So how do we develop that tendency to want to reduce our false ego, not just chanting the holy name maybe to get some prestige or some good feelings, or akadashi, I did so many akadashis. But I'm still a jerk.
So, Jai Baladev, your question had to do with what the concern is you're expressing, and it's within the question is one may be performing, chanting the Maha Mantra, one may be observing Ekadasi, so different sacrifices, but at the same time, the difficulty may be to actually give up one's false ego, because one may be mentally holding some sort of offensive mentality towards others. Presumably the others are persons that are engaged in the process of chanting as well. And you made a distinction between different kinds of austerities that you were noticing. You called them, ego-reducing austerities versus another category, and I didn't get the other category. Popularity-producing, okay. Okay, you were contrasting two possible kind of austerities. Okay. Well, if one is undertaking the austerity, or if not, if one doesn't use the term austerity, but one's taking up the process of the means of sacrifice that's prescribed for the age that we're living in, the chanting of the Maha Mantra, then it means that one is actually following the parampara system, because that's the instruction for this particular age to chant the Maha Mantra, that's the sacrifice one is performing. So automatically, by performing that sacrifice, one is pleasing directly Lord Krishna. One's pleasing the demigods. One's pleasing the other followers of the Parampara system. Everybody's pleased if somebody takes up chanting. So then there's the discovery that's in the observation that you've made, that one takes up that sacrifice but runs into a difficulty. And that difficulty can be that one is mentally keeping oneself separated from the holy name, separated from Krishna, because that's what it means to have a false ego. It means one's not letting go of the way one perceives oneself. So that perception of oneself is such that one's not allowing oneself to open oneself up to the relationship with Lord Krishna, because that's what brings about the breakdown of the ego. So as opposed to saying, I am an American man who has this occupation and I have an income of so much and I have this family member, and I reside at this particular place. So that's the ego. It's understanding oneself in relation to the particular material designations that are there. One's place of residence, one's family members, one's age or age of the body. Now, why are those hindrances in performing the yajna, one may ask? And you highlighted that the hindrance has to do with alongside holding those concepts of oneself, one is actually also holding some kind of offensive ideas towards others. So the offensive ideas towards others are facilitated by holding on to the those material designations, those material concepts of oneself. And the reason that is so is because the element of comparison comes in. If one's holding a material concept, then one's going to have to compare with somebody else. So I have this particular ability. Oh, does that person have that ability? And how much of this ability does the other person have? Oh, I think I rank higher. Okay. So, and oh, let me now compare my place of residence to that person's place of residence. I mean, one gets into the element of comparison. The minute there's comparison, because one's holding onto those concepts, so it means that one has to be safe and secure in those concepts, because anything you hold on to, you need to protect it. So the means for protection is to make oneself grander, more powerful, more intelligent, more handsome than any other person. So this is what the problem is. The comparison element comes in. And why it blocks the relationship with Krishna, particularly in the chanting of the Maha Mantra as an act of sacrifice, is that one is not shifting one's concepts to the true ego concept. So the true ego concept is to drop the one of all those ways of identifying or how one identifies with what one thinks one is. Rather, one shifts one's ego to that of, actually, if I see myself, and it's like the demigods here, I mean, how they addressed a request or even asking about sacrifice, they immediately made it clear what their position was in relation to Lord Krishna, because they say something to the effect of, you know, what are we in just little sparks compared to you. So one starts to understand one's actual position. So strip away the entire, you know, bodily part and all the extensions of it, and you strip it down to the very the spiritual spark that is one's actual self, and then one sees oneself in relation to Krishna, you know, the huge blazing fire, and these little spark, the little teeny spark that one is in connection to him, that relieves one of so much distress, of so much unnecessary encumbrance, of so much mental suffering, this constantly trying to protect something that isn't in the ultimate sense the reality. Because it'll all, you know, have to fall away through coming to the point of death. All of it falls away. So what was the necessity of protecting that so desperately? And it also takes away the offensiveness too when, you know, one sees one's small position in relation to Krishna, and also very happily looks to try and serve him, taking on that mentality of just wanting to serve Lord Krishna brings so much happiness and the blessing too, because Krishna has actually asked for this to be done, so it brings blessing. So just having, shifting the ego makes a huge difference, and ending that necessity to protect those unnecessary material things that were gifts in the first place. I mean, it was a gift to have intelligence of a certain kind. It was a gift to have a residence of a particular kind. It was a gift to have a body of a certain kind. Everything is a gift. So what is the necessity to, you know, jealously guard it? What is the necessity? Better to direct one's energies, you know, in a way that puts one in line for receiving so much blessing. You know, some thought. Okay, and then this gentleman. Hare Krishna. There's no such thing. That's a very interesting question. Well, the material world is comprised certainly of this earthly planet, but there's also the heavenly realm, and the demigods are the suppliers of that rain, and they have to be pleased in order to want to supply air, water, light, and rain. So your question has to do with, well, if there isn't the performance of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the Yajna, that particular sacrifice, then how was it that rain took place, particularly in countries, let's say the whole continent of America, the whole continent of Africa, etc., the whole continent of Europe, even the Middle East, the Asian countries, with the exclusion perhaps of India, where some of that particular yajna is being performed. So it's a practical question. It would mean that one has to look at practically what extent of chanting the Maha Mantra was taking place, because the question implies that nothing was taking place. So, I mean, for a long time we've been existing in a very global, globally mobile world, So one doesn't necessarily anymore restrict, possibly the nationality that's most prominent in chanting the Maha Mantra to that particular isolated tract of land. So no doubt one could say that persons carrying the Maha Mantra may very easily have been distributed throughout this earthly planet. And then in terms of looking at it on a longer timeline, I mean, Lord Chaitanya was present in the 15th century, or 1400 and something. So even going back those 500 years, there's chanting that was happening. So, and even if the chanting, let's say hypothetically, was just to have been happening in one isolated part of the earthly planet, the fact that it's happening, one person, even a demigod, will be pleased and rain is supplied. Because it's the sacrifice that's requested for this age. So I don't know how many billion people are present on the earthly planet, but certainly one could assume that at least from the time of Lord Chaitanya, when this particular method of sacrifice was directly given. So for 500 years, one can presume that that rain being supplied by the demigods certainly came from the performance of duties on persons who understood the scriptural teachings and had taken up that process of yagya. And if it was a case of prior to Lord Chaitanya, because certainly the earth has been, we can see that the demigods isolated the brahmanas. So one can be certain that there's been the category of brahmanas there all along. So that obligation on the part of the demigods, particularly Lord Indra, was the person occupying the post of Lord Indra, is such that the obligation is fulfilled, no doubt, somehow or other, just through the existence of brahmanas somewhere, even if it is prior to Lord Chaitanya. That is using logic. Thank you. I think Jaini Tagore, I read.
Well, the question, Jayabala Dev had spoke about, he had a lot, but in your answer you had mentioned that the ego is what's preventing a person from reaching that realization of that I am this spark, I am this part and parcel, and therefore all these things, all this baggage, these external designations are not relevant. And that's what's actually impeding one from being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness and in the holy name. And then you had said that moving that ego aside is a huge benefit. And then following that you said that therefore, or thus, performing these activities is, you referred indirectly or directly to devotional service or chanting. So, then it comes, it's mentioned there that so many people are coming to the temple because people are chanting Hare Krishna and they're getting this Agyata Sukriti. And similarly, it's by chanting Hare Krishna in devotional service that the ego is dissolved. Yet, it's by moving the ego aside that we're able to increase our attraction to the chanting. So, in my mind, the chicken and the egg are coming there. And I'm wondering, basically all the benefit, my speculation is that all the benefit we're getting from Maha Mantra is Agyata Sukriti. Because if we had that full taste in the chanting, then the benefits from it, we've already transcended that benefit of dissolving the ego. It's the ego that's there, that's why we're benefiting from chanting and from performing devotional service. Which is why I'm presuming that it's preceding the dissolving of the ego, even aware or unaware of that. So one may be aware that they're benefiting from Maha Mantra, but they're in ignorance, because if they truly knew Krishna, and Krishna is Maha Mantra, so if they truly knew Maha Mantra, then the ego would be out of the way anyway, and they would be, you know, pure devotee. Is my question coming off clearly, or am I speculating?
You want to try and shorten it?
Okay. So, to shorten it, Hare Krishna. Many people, spiritualists, transcendentalists, are very aware of the ego being in their way, that the ego is a problem. So, I mean, even impersonal meditators, one complaint that they have is that when they leave their meditation, they're again disturbed by the ego. And it's by this process of devotional first service and chanting that we are able to transcend our material designations in the ego. Yet the ego is the obstacle that's preventing us from going deeper, as you said. So, yeah.
So maybe please I can elaborate. Help with, concisely putting what was expressed. There was the observation that persons being exposed to the Maha Mantra are getting benefit just by virtue of the fact that they're hearing the Maha Mantra. And then there was the observation that somebody actively engaged, an aspiring transcendentalist, actively engaged in chanting the Maha Mantra may become quite conscious of the ego being a block, and referring to Jaya Baladev's observation. So in some sense you were wondering, so the transcendentalist is aware that the ego is acting as a blockage to truly accessing the holy name, but at the same time it's only with chanting the holy name that the ego can be dissolved. So in some sense, which comes first, sort of the ego and the chanting, or the ego being carried with the Maha Mantra and somehow it's getting dissolved somewhere along the way, or is it that the ego is getting dropped and then one's accessing the name? How's it working? Something like that? Okay. Well, the minute one takes up chanting the Maha Mantra, one has directly chosen to engage in the process of sacrifice for this age. So that direct taking up of the chanting of the Maha Mantra, with all one's huge false ego accompanying one in taking up that particular sacrifice, one automatically starts to access the path or the line of mercy, the kindness, the benediction that's coming from, tracing back to Krishna, but coming from all the personalities in the parampara system, just by virtue of the fact that that's one has taken up that particular sacrifice. So one is accessing the entire parampara line. Every one of those personalities is bestowing benediction upon one. So it's not that one's thinking, oh, somewhere in the distance, maybe Krishna's hearing this and, gee, you know, here I am with my huge false ego and, you know, what hope? It's not actually like that. It's immediately the entire line of personalities is bestowing benediction upon one. And the benediction comes in the form of internally one becomes aware of everything one is carrying. That's the benediction that's received. Before that, one may not be aware. It was taken for granted. It was understood, oh, this is who I am. You know, everything that's gone to make me up, so much education, these parents, this occupation, all of that is taken to be a given. There's nothing more to it. Then the minute one takes up this process of sacrifice, then one actually acts in accessing the mercy of the entire parampara, starts to examine all those taken for granted concepts. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Is this, but you know, 2 years ago I saw myself as a school child. 4 years later, I saw myself as a university graduate. Oh, it seems things are changing quite a bit. What am I holding on to here? Okay, I'll add the school child. I'll add the university graduate. I'll add. And then, yeah, oh, goodness, I'm carrying such a huge weight of, oh, my goodness, can't I simplify this in some way? And then that's when one starts to think, okay, let me turn my attention to what's really important. What is really, really, really important here? I have obligations. I have duties to perform. Maybe that's what I should put my focus on instead of looking at everything that, you know, gives me some sort of sense of, pleasure, stability, these concepts. Rather, let me just focus on dutifully doing what it is I have to do to please Lord Krishna. And the minute that thought comes in, going to please Lord Krishna, everything changes. Everything changes. No longer is the same weight given to all everything that's been carried on the subtle plane. There's a whole shift in emotional shift, a shift in one's psyche, a shift in consciousness that allows one to direct one's mind, direct one's body in the direction that is truly important. And and that is because of the kindness that's coming from the entire parampara system. And it's immediate. It's immediate. It's not that, you know, okay, maybe if I chant 1 week later, I might, you know, experience something or understand something. It's not like that. Immediately, there's a change. Immediately. Yes.
Thank you very much. Can I interrupt with another sort of observation that when that direction is toward pleasing Krishna, and then we're able to face all these designations that we have about ourselves, then we're being put in the fire because, like you said, we're becoming aware of it, and then it's painful. So the moment it's happening in an instance, we want to please Krishna, and then in that same instant, we're put inside a fire of purification. That was an observation. And sitting in that fire, if I may, maybe elaborate a bit, particularly in chanting, then the ego comes in. We're going to start, for me personally, if it's okay, we have a minute,
yes,
to wrestle the ego with the ego. Right? So then we're chanting, and then the ego's coming in, and then we start wrestling with it, trying to think of different ways of thinking of ourselves or something, rather than just chanting. It's But you're in the fire, but then still just chant. Is this the instruction? Still just chant. You're in the fire.
Mm. Because it's a prescribed method, and one embraces it completely and utterly, and the ego protests, the mind kicks and screams and shouts and rebels. One continues enthusiastically, because it is the means to free oneself. So enthusiastically, like truly embracing the holy name, truly embracing it. Because the other, even if the mind tells one it's important, even if the ego is deeply entrenched and it feels like one's wrenching a part of oneself out on the subtle plane, it doesn't matter. It's all the authoritative scriptures say this is the method. One takes it, okay, I can't see at the moment, or I accept to some degree, I'm struggling, but I'm taking it on faith. This is the way I'm making this sacrifice. I'm going to go through this discomfort. I'm going to go through the wrestling I have to do, because I know that my real shelter is the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. My real shelter is my most immediate person in the Parampara system, my spiritual master. I take shelter of those lotus feet. I remember those personalities as I'm going through my struggle. I look for their instructions each time there's a particular struggle, and it's manifest. Some kindness comes where one receives some indication of what one should do to be able to put aside something, or to be able to like drop it completely, never to look at again. Yeah. Discard. So, and it's very manifest, that kindness that's coming, that's allowing for that discardal. It's one's constantly protected, because this is the prescribed method of sacrifice and the inbuilt blessing. Inbuilt. One cannot not be successful. So, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. All glories to the Maha Mantra. Jai. Jordan, for kindly listening. I'm oh, shame. Thank you.